Hey, buddy. Welcome back, man.
Hey, Brandon. I'm happy to be back.
I'm glad to have you here.
Last week totally sucked. I was feeling ill, and I thought it would be best that I stayed home.
Yeah, you feeling a bit better?
I do. I feel a lot better, and I'm, like, super motivated for our show today. And it's like, I did feel guilty, even though I didn't feel well. But then I thought for a minute, I'm like, should I just go down there and do the episode anyway, and even if it's a bad episode and I'm cranky, do it. But then I thought, nah, I'm pretty glad. I'm just so glad that we have that best of show that we can put out for when, like, one of us is sick. That's why we did it. But what's crazy, though, I kind of had a fever the other night, and I thought I was having a fever dream and that you did the show all by yourself. You were talking about a black punk band in the 70s called Death. No, it's, I don't even think that band exists. You were arguing with Lindsey Graham by yourself. And then you did this it was bad. A long and horrible and unfunny diatribe on political parties. I mean, come on. Boring as fuck. I mean, it was a nightmare, but I almost fell asleep because that was so boring. And then you're talking about Nebraska and their electoral votes. And you said they have 3 electoral votes. And everybody, except for fucking idiots, know that it's 5. It was an absolute nightmare, and I'm glad that nightmare's over. Wasn't that funny, man?
Dave.
Yeah, what's up?
We don't have a best of episode.
Oh.
Which will live in infamy.
Only a foolish optimist can deny the dark realities of the moment.
Ah, well, that was kind of a shock to know that you actually did the episode by yourself last week.
Yep. By myself.
Hey, I will have to say, though, in all honesty, it was a really good piece. I learned some new music, and your part on political parties was really informative, and it was quite good. I was excited to do that bit because it's something that I know a lot about, and I know you know a lot about it too. And as I'm listening to it, I'm like, "Yep, you didn't need me for that one." So,
well, good. I'm glad I met your approval, Dave. Definitely. Do I get a very good and a gold star?
You get a gold star.
Cool.
And something else later. Trump. No, man. So, nothing has happened.
Nothing at all, again.
In the past 2 weeks. Oh, we have quite a show for you today.
Oh, it's jam-packed today.
It is jam-packed. And we are going to start off today by doing our Black History piece. We have 2 topics that we are going to talk about today. And then we are going to dive into some of the interesting things that have happened over the past couple of weeks. Next month in March, we're going to like turn it a little bit, and we're going to do Women's History.
Yep.
So that's a little bit of a preview for what's coming up next.
Yeah, we always have things to talk about.
Always have things to talk about. So the very first thing I want to talk about in terms of Black history are the Tuskegee Airmen.
Hell yeah. I'm glad we're kind of finishing on this one, because I think this is one of the most badass part of Black history that, even though it is talked about and there's movie stuff, it doesn't get talked about enough.
No, it doesn't.
How fucking badass they were.
Absolutely. And there are only a handful of these Tuskegee Airmen that are still alive. You know, World War II veterans are, you know, dying off very fast, and we have just a little snippet of time to just, you know, see a few of these men as a primary source, because they will be gone in a few years. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just the way life goes, and it's kind of makes me kind of sad and kind of somber to realize that we're losing the greatest generation. But, you know, that's what's happening. So enough about that sad stuff. Let's talk about the Tuskegee Airmen. So the U.S. military has, prior to the Korean War, was segregated. The very first black regiment to fight an American war was the Massachusetts 54th Regiment during the Civil War. And they were a Northern Army regiment, obviously.
Shockingly.
They
weren't allowed.
Yeah, shockingly. And they had to endure an immense amount of racism and discrimination from the Union, from the North, from their fellow white soldiers, just to be able to get the chance to fight in a war. They eventually led the front against Fort Wagner in South Carolina, and most of them on that attack died, but they volunteered to take the front row. And with that, they earned the respect of their fellow countrymen in the Union Army for the most part. And after that point, African Americans continued, were able to serve in the military, but still in a segregated role. It's always kind of a catch-22 because you have situations like this where you have people that are proving themselves to do the job even better than has ever been done before. And then once the war is over, they get congratulated and then go back to regular society that continues to discriminate against them.
That's just tough. I mean, it's tough for a soldier to go back to regular life after fighting in a war, let alone go back to poverty and discrimination and all the ills of society that they had to put up with. So
absolutely.
God damn.
Right. So, right. So you fast forward to
World War II.
World War II.
And the Tuskegee Airmen were... So, the Army and Air Force weren't separate then.
Mm-hmm.
So, they were part of the Army that had this new branch called the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go with the full history because, I mean, that could be its own episode. But they were an all-black squadron mm-hmm. of fighter pilots.
Mm-hmm.
They flew the P-51, which at the time was one of the more advanced aircrafts. It had a land speed that was faster than most, but didn't have quite the turning rate of a Spitfire or a Messerschmitt.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were a little more heavily gunned, a little more armored. Mm-hmm. Like the Spitfire was
right.
Made of wood, but could turn and maneuver very well. The Messerschmitt.
Manischewitz.
was, it had a much higher climb rate, so it could climb above and come down on fighters. But the P-51 kind of combined all that and was heavily armored.
Right. So it was basically a durable workhorse type of fighter.
It really was.
Yeah.
And
their main job, wasn't it, during World War II, was to protect the bombers on bombing raids over
especially,
Germany.
Especially in the later part of the war, where the bombers could finally go over occupied Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And you found this fact out, so I want you to tell it about mm-hmm. the bombers. They would do escort missions over
escort missions over occupied territory, and the Tuskegee Airmen were the only squadron of fighter pilots during World War II that never lost one bomber. Not one time.
And that, it's almost unheard of.
It is.
You know what bomber they escorted on one of their missions? The Memphis Bell.
The Memphis Bell.
Yep. And if listeners don't know what the Memphis Bell is, so bombers had a life. Mm-hmm. The crew, if they did 25 missions, they got to go back home.
Right.
Barely any... I think Memphis Bell was the first one and maybe one of three, I think, that actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
And Tuskegee Airmen escorted
that one.
Several times.
Yep. So they are world-renowned. They are the epitome. They are the high point of these fighter squadrons that...
They actually teach their formations in pilot school.
In pilot school today, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, just like the 54th Massachusetts Regiment did, the Tuskegee Airmen did the same thing on the World War II scale. They were the best of the best. In fact... They have another interesting fact that you're going to talk about is when they shot three German jets in a day.
Yeah.
Talk about that. So, because if you think about those planes you were talking about, remember, they're not fast. They're not the best. But they were able to take down highly superior technological airplanes developed by the Germans.
So in World War II, the air forces were dominated by propeller planes, which usually reached about 450 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
At the dying end of World War II... the Germans started ramping up their, what they called their super weapons. And one of their super weapons was a plane that had jet propulsion.
Yep.
This, they said it could reach 800 miles per hour, but they were kind of clocked in theater doing about 625 to 650, which is
a hell of a lot faster than anything in the air.
Way faster than any of the propeller planes. So not only were they high, you couldn't dogfight them because you couldn't, if you got behind them, they were gone.
It was impossible.
And they would swoop in and just shoot the planes and the bombers and just disappear, come back around, land, reload, come back around. The Tuskegee Airmen shot three of them down
in a day.
One fucking day.
Yes.
In a fucking propeller craft.
Absolutely. So talk about having this knowledge of how to fly an airplane, but the engineering skill and the mathematical skill and the communication skill in real time.
Yeah. What it was.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't so much that they were better pilots. They were better pilots, but it wasn't so much they were outperforming their planes. They were leading these jets into traps.
Yep.
And that's how they were gunning them down. So they would hide behind bombers and have a lead plane or lead squadron kind of come in, get these jets to follow them, and they would appear from behind the bombers or from behind the sun. They use the sun a lot, too, and would come in from a higher altitude and swoop down on these jets.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal.
But they have to be segregated.
But they had to be segregated still.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. One thing that's funny, I thought this was interesting. So Thurgood Marshall, who would become later the first African-American on the Supreme Court, he actually defended the Tuskegee Airmen when they were trainees in Indiana. They tried to enter an all-white officers' club, and guess what they were charged with?
Oh, God only knows.
Mutiny. Like, is this Pirates of the Caribbean?
We fly planes, right? Not we're not on a boat. Right?
Yeah. I mean, they were going to be fully court-martialed and dismissed and even prosecuted just for doing that. And Thurgood Marshall, as a young attorney, literally defended them and got them scot-free off the hook.
To the detriment of the Germans.
To the detriment of the Germans. Jeez, old Pete. Oh, man. Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh.
Yes. Wife of the famous
FDR.
She was also key in getting him approved and established after watching a training film while she visited the Tuskegee Airfield in Alabama. So she actually went down to see them in action and was so impressed that she literally went to her husband
FDR.
And Congress and convinced them single-handedly to allow them not just to exist as a squadron, but to go into the theater and fight and to defend the white squadrons.
Hey,
how about them apples? Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. One former airman almost shot and killed Muammar Gaddafi in Tripoli back in 1970. That'd be crazy. And then three airmen later became generals. Isn't that insane?
That is insane.
They could easily be considered the most decorated, if not one of the most decorated regiments, squadrons, and all the U.S. military forces in the history of the United States.
Yeah. And discriminated against.
They went back to Jim Crow.
Yeah.
Because most of them were from the South. They went back to live in the South, and they had to live in the Jim Crow South. Some of them experienced beatings and hosings and things like that.
Yeah.
So, change is slow. Hopefully we learn lessons. But sometimes we need to speed the fuck up. So if you don't know much about the Tuskegee Airmen, I mean, we just did a little bit of a snippet on there. And Brandon, you had a lot of good knowledge about the airplanes and a lot of the strategy that they used. I really appreciate that. Look them up.
Oh, absolutely.
Do a little bit of Googling research. Learn about them, and you will be pleased.
But they are not talked about nearly enough. And the more you read into them, the more you go, holy fuck. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Even the Germans recognize them.
Absolutely. And in the past few years, they have been recognized more, but it's mostly posthumously because most of them are all gone.
Yeah.
But a lot of them have been here over the past 20 years to, you know, receive awards and kind of get the decoration that they deserved. So some of them have gotten to see that. in their lifetime, so that is a good thing.
Yeah, but not nearly enough.
Not nearly enough. That makes me feel good talking about them.
Yeah.
All right.
They're fantastic.
Oh, now I'm excited. We got another one to talk about. Woo! Ooh, yeah. Man, I was inspired last week when you played Death.
A real band that exists.
that we're on the forefront of punk rock music. And that got me thinking to one of my favorite bands of all time. They kind of defy genre. I mean, you could consider this band to be punk, ska,
funk,
yeah. Metal. Who knows what they are? Right. They are a caricature of humanity. They are bigger than life. They are very intense, very funny, very passionate, very socially conscious, and they come from a lot of experience. And this band is called Fishbone.
My dad is drunk, and my mom's a schizo. My dad's a drunk, and my mom's a schizo. I'm a fool, my wife's afraid, my father is a fool, my sister's a whore, I can't take it no more, I got bad luck, but wait, there's more.
Oh.
Yeah, define that genre.
Yeah, exactly. And that is like one of their most hardcore sounding songs, but their music spans just about everything. And at the end of the show tonight, we're going to play another song from the same exact album called Unyielding Conditioning, that sounds nothing like that. And many of you will find much more listenable. But I love that fucking song. But that song just isn't a bunch of loud noise. Yeah, that's Angelo Moore, the Mohawk saxophone-yielding, stage-diving, crazy man that leads Fishbone, talking about his family, talking about family issues that he endured growing up in South Central Los Angeles. Fishbone grew up in the same environment that groups like Public Enemy grew up in.
NWA.
And rapped about. And NWA. They had to endure extreme racism in the 1980s. They had to deal with police brutality on a firsthand basis. So a lot of their music is very political. One of their songs, Everyday Sunshine, the video for that was actually produced and directed by Spike Lee. So, yeah, cool. They definitely did get some recognition in the African-American community and by, you know, the general public. They're not an obscure band, even though a lot of people haven't heard from them.
It's not really something you play on the radio.
No, it's really not something you play on the radio. Even though they have songs that would be good on the radio, they just kind of never got that following.
Yeah.
They really got popular with like the Lollapalooza crowd in the you know early 1990s, basically a bunch of white fans.
Yeah, white dudes wearing dreadlocks and shit.
Exactly, cargo shorts and. Oh wait, no, those are Dave Matthews fans. Never mind. Yeah, but Fishbone is really really good musically. They speak a lot about experiences, especially in terms of race. But they are a very loving group. They are a very inclusive group, and they're good people. I mean, they really, really are. So, yay.
Check them out.
Check them out, man. Fuck yeah.
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 All right. Well, I think that kind of brings our Black History Month segment, our month, a little bit to an end.
Yes.
A little bit.
A little bit to an end.
A bit. So next week, we'll move on to the women's history.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want to start this next segment off by saying we also want to give a big middle finger to somebody.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Can we go tell them now?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to tell them, Dave, who we're giving a big middle finger to?
Yeah, I do.
All right.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yep. As many of you have probably heard, he passed away last week. And we don't want to say that illness is good. We don't want to promote anybody's death.
Yeah.
But this was a terrible, terrible man.
He was not a good person, and he did not do well for the culture of the United States of America. And you know, Brandon, like you just said, I mean, we're peace-loving individuals. That's why we're progressive, you know? Right. We don't want anybody. We don't wish harm on anybody. We don't wish death. You know, Rush Limbaugh had lung cancer, which is a very long, debilitating type of cancer. And it sucks. You know, I'm sure, you know, he has family and friends that loved him and they loved him back. So the last thing we ever want to do is to make light of somebody because they're gone. But at the same time, you dying doesn't give a free pass to sweep the hatred and the vitriol and the things that you did in your life under the rug.
Yep. And many people on the right will say that he was a conservative voice, that he spoke through the liberal noise. And that's fine if you really speak to those conservative values, but you can do it without the hate, without the vitriol, and without the misogyny.
Absolutely. I mean, what do you think people like Jack Kemp, Bob Dole, even a Ronald Reagan would say about that type of branded conservatism?
Actually, Ronald Reagan wrote a letter, but that was when he was suffering from dementia, so who knows what Ronald Reagan was
right,
thinking.
Right, right. Did he like him?
Yeah, he said they call you the most hated man or the most dangerous man in America. Mm-hmm. They used to say that about me. That was kind of really towards the later end of Reagan.
And probably earlier on in Rush's career.
Yeah, because Rush Limbaugh came on where after Reagan repealed the Fairness Equality Act, where you had to give balanced...
The airway time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Balanced... Mm-hmm.
Equal time, it was
equal
called.
Equal time.
Yep.
That's what it was. So he repealed that, or really stripped it down in 1987. Mm-hmm. That's where Limbaugh came in. And towards the end of Reagan's presidency.
Exactly.
But really started kicking off his fucking hate speech in about 89.
And they use the word conservative, not as an ideology, but as a brand.
Yeah.
As a message. And it's not really a sound political ideology that they're talking about. It's used as a way to diametrically oppose with hate those who disagree with you.
Yeah. And if you want to attach your brand to that, then go fuck yourselves.
Absolutely.
So, Dave?
Yes?
I think it's time for us to go to church.
We need a little bit of
we're gonna do
healing.
We need a little bit of healing in this
world. Okay.
And we are going to give our tribute, our healing,
to the hater in chief, Rush Limbaugh.
From the bottom.
Yep.
All right. Ooh. Can you feel me, brothers and sisters?
Can you feel it? I'm feeling it. I'm ready.
The Holy Spirit's moving through me.
For this posthumous celebration of Rush Hudson Limbaugh III. Third, which means that there were other Rush Limbaughs. Four, number of wives that he had.
Yeah. All right, brothers and sisters. Gather round. I want you to feel the energy. Feel it, Dave.
I can feel it.
I want you to feel it, soul.
It's there, buddy.
In your bones.
Yeah.
Let's pray for a moment, Dave.
All right.
And bring it down. Bring it down. Rush, your soul is as dark as the people you hated. Can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you. Mm-hmm. Oh, are you ready for another, Brandon?
Ooh, pray with me, Dave. Pray with me.
I can feel his essence. I can feel it, brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I feel?
What's that?
Hate.
From the
misogyny, and unbounded racism. I feel the kind of essence that only a petty, petulant liar can emanate. Can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you!
Yeah.
Woo! Oh. You know what, Dave? Rush, they call them a patriot. What a protector of values. And I want you to take a moment with me.
Uh-huh.
Take a moment for his patriotism to wash over us.
Wash me, please, babe.
Wash your dirty socialism away.
Mm-hmm.
Can you feel it, Dave? Can you feel the patriotism of a man who said after a policeman was beaten to death with an American flag that the Capitol riot was an American revolution?
Can I get a fuck?
Oh, I get a fuck.
Woo!
Mm-hmm.
He once said, and I'm speaking the truth, hear me now. Would I lie to you, brothers and sisters? He's going to say his words through me now. You know who deserves a posthumous Medal of Honor? James Earl Ray.
That's the confessed assassin of Martin Luther King Jr.
We miss you, James. Godspeed. Can I get a double fuck you?
Double fuck you.
Fuck you, fuck you.
Let's fuck you, fuck you. All right. You called Obama a African. You said they're 12% of the population. Who the hell cares? We need segregated buses. NFL games are like watching the Bloods and Crips without weapons. May you rest in hate and that you eternally go fuck yourself. Can I get an eternal fuck you?
Fuck you forever.
Oh, yeah. Woo. I'm feeling cleansed. How about you, buddy?
I feel disturbed that those are quotes that were actually emanated by someone on the real airwaves, and that people listened to that, and that became the number one radio talk show for decades.
Yeah. What we said on just now, in that bit, that wasn't made up. That wasn't abridged. That wasn't out of context. Those were direct quotes.
Those are things that he really said. And I'm going to read a few more things that Rush Limbaugh has said over the years. And these are real quotes on the air that have never been disputed, that he has never apologized for, that he has doubled down on. Here are some examples. You're a foreigner. You shut your mouth or you get out.
Let stupid and unskilled Mexicans do that work.
Blacks are 12% of the population. Who the hell cares?
Have you ever noticed how all composite pictures of wanted criminals look like Jesse Jackson?
Holocaust, 50 million Indians? Only 4 million left? They all have casinos. What's to complain about?
We need segregated buses.
The NAACP should get a liquor store and practice robberies.
Women still live longer than men because their lives are easier.
Take that bone out of your nose and call me back.
If any race of people should not have guilt about slavery,
it's Caucasians.
Feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women easier access to the mainstream of society.
All right. I want to say, can I get another eternal fuck you?
Fuck you forever.
This isn't conservatism. This no. is hate.
If you're a true conservative, this should insult you. You should be insulted that someone has used that title for those type of expressions. This isn't from the 1920s or the 1950s. These are things that he said from the early 90s all the way to the present. I mean, and those are only a few things. I mean, we could go on and on and on and on.
And this piece of shit got a presidential Medal of Freedom.
Given to him by another
piece of
misogynist,
yeah.
Racist, bigoted, dividing. It's not republicanism. It's not conservatism. It's own beast.
Yeah.
You know? And here's the thing, like, so listening to you last week talking about political parties, mm-hmm. and in the 1960s, the new Republican Party that we still pretty much have with us today as far as its structure took advantage of the southern part of the United States. Yep, primarily white Christians, the Southern Strategy. And then through the 70s and 80s, you get coupled with it the rise of evangelical preachers like Jim Baker and Falwell.
Falwell,
and, yeah. So evangelical Christianity molded itself into the Republican Party. And then right around 1990, 1991, Rush Limbaugh enters the airwaves and mixes that in with this divisive, ideological war.
Yeah. It was definitely a way to really kind of separate that Southern strategy away from progressives.
Exactly.
Using the mantle of conservatism.
Right.
And using that whole... Using that fear-mongering of the commies are taking over.
Yeah.
The socialists are coming. And then just spewing his own hate about it and be like, oh, well, no, he's just conservative. No. No, he wasn't just conservative. He was a piece of hateful shit. Right.
And then you have a percentage of the population, 30, 35% of the population, that wants to confirm their own biases and hate. And they listen to that, and they listen to that, and they listen to that, and they repeat, and they repeat, and they repeat. You want to know why this type of radio and this type of TV that you've seen with like Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and the idiot Tucker with the bow tie Carlson. And Laura Ingraham, they are popular, they get high ratings, because there's a core of people that want to be told what to think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't, it's hard work. Like, you listen to a news pundit, and you go, I don't agree with that. I'm going to have to see the... I mean, you have to... It takes a moment. You have to go and find another thing. So, when you have it all encompassed, and you get your faith through it, too, hey,
absolutely.
I'll do that. If I get my news and my faith and everything I need to know wrapped up in this 30-minute segment, that's easy.
Yeah, yeah. And he would also... And they would also equate the popularity and the success and the ratings with being legitimate in public discourse.
And being correct.
And being correct. And it was nothing but that. Yeah.
I mean, I tried hard. I don't really see an ideology that Limbaugh actually came up with. Or
no.
Or a problem that he had solutions for. It was just wrong, hate.
Right. Yep. And you know what? I mean, there's an opportunity. I think there's a silver lining opportunity with Republicans right now with this so-called, not really, it's kind of fake, but this civil war between establishment, old school Republicans and the Trump wing of the Republican Party. You know, who's going to win that battle? What's the future of the Republican Party going to be? Are they going to keep going down that rabbit hole? Or are you going to see people like Adam Kissinger and other people like that starting to bubble up to the surface and...
I was thinking about that today.
Yeah.
And I have an analogy for it. I think that the Republicans have kind of gone so far right wing. And people are kind of going, no, we didn't really want that. But they've been able, through the Electoral College, through having senators for each, two senators for each state, you know, really been electable. In that mathematical formula of the Electoral College and whatnot, that they continue to have to push themselves further and further to get that conservative base or that right-wing base. Not so much conservative, but the right-wing base.
Right.
I think they're kind of like a car right now. They're like a NASCAR. Yep. And they're going, and they're redlining right now. And you can only redline for so long before it explodes
and burns up. And
I may be wrong, but I think that's what's happening right now, is that they've just pushed too hard for too long, and Trump is where the red line is finally starting to give in, that engine's going to burst into flames.
That is an extraordinary analogy, linking NASCAR with Trumpism. Oh my God, that's brilliant.
Think about that.
Fuck, my God. Are we being funny today?
Oh shit, God damn it, not again.
So, the day after Rush Limbaugh died, I just wanted to add this in here. I believe it was a day or two after. I saw some sad news that Bob Dole has also been diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. He's 97 years old, And it's kind of a... I want to bring him up because we just got done talking about Rush not being a true conservative or a real Republican. And Bob Dole was.
He was.
He wasn't an ideologue. He was kind of like a Joe Biden on the Republican side.
Speaking about that, guess who went to visit him?
Joe Biden. Absolutely. And speaking of heroes, like the Tuskegee Airmen, Bob Dole, 2 Purple Hearts, Bronze Star, Congressional Medal of Freedom. I mean, when we talk about losing our greatest generation, that is a prime example.
No.
And if you just think, I mean, in 1996, when he was running for president with Jack Kemp against Bill Clinton, Rush was at the height of his popularity at that time. And there were still plenty of Republicans that were willing to get behind, you know, what I would consider a true Republican, like Bob Dole.
Yeah.
And actually, Jack Kemp understood urban politics very well. He was established actually with the African-American community in Georgia pretty well. He was, you know, an excellent moderate Republican that could have propelled the Republican Party to be much more inclusive. And it just kind of feels like after the Dole-Kemp candidacy that the Republican Party just kind of shifted away from that into who they were going to bring onto the national stage.
Yeah, they definitely flipped almost completely. Because I don't think the Republican Party right now is really... They don't... When I look at them, they don't say anything. They just stand against.
Right. And they just spew.
And I was on Twitter last week doing my daily thing I do on there. Getting my soul crushed. Anyway, but they were still railing against masks. And I was Jim Jordan, actually. It was a tweet. And I'm like, well, what else are we going to do? What else do we have?
Right.
What is it? If masks are so bad, what can we do then?
Right.
What is it?
Mm-hmm.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No ideas.
They don't have any ideas because they're too busy railing against what they don't understand or they're just standing against.
Yeah, and just speaking to their core base that will believe anything that they do and say. It's the same thing. It's a dog and pony show. They're running in circles. Yeah. No ideas, no philosophy, no guiding principles, no intellectual, ideological background. It's just jibber jabber.
Yeah.
Dangerous jibber jabber.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to brand yourself conservative, fine, but conservatives used to have ideas and things. Remember when they wanted to go to the gold standard? At least that was a fucking idea.
It's an idea. Right. Exactly.
You could actually debate that.
Right.
But when they're going on about Jewish space lasers and kids being held hostage in cosmic pizza.
Right. Or in Wayfair boxes and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I forgot about that one, actually.
Yeah. Or they take, like, take sex trafficking and, like, turn that into a conspiracy. Absolutely insane.
You want to talk about insane, Dave?
Yep.
Let's travel down to Texas.
Oh, good, man. I'm so sick of this fucking winter. I can't wait to go down to Texas. Put on my swimming trunks, take a dip in the pool, sit on the beach.
How sick were you last week?
I wasn't feeling that good, man.
I have some news.
Yeah?
At one point last week, Texas got as cold as Alaska.
No fucking way, man.
Yep.
God, you almost say global warming's real.
Yeah. So, guess who's down in Texas? It's our buddy.
Teddy.
It's our buddy Teddy.
Ted Cruz.
It's our insurrection buddy.
It's our insurrection buddy. Oh, man. But now he's going on vacation. He's ditching his constituents and peacing the fuck out.
So, if anybody's been living on a rock, or under a rock, I think the phrase goes.
Anywhere around a rock.
Or a rock, whatever. Ted Cruz had his electricity go out. With pretty much Most of Texas.
most of the deregulated grid of Texas.
We'll get into that.
Yes.
So it got a little cold, like I said. Mm-hmm. It literally did get down to as cold as Alaska was.
Yeah.
Which is very uncomfortable. I understand why he did this, but that motherfucker went to Cancun. Mexico.
And here's the thing. If you haven't seen the pictures, Brian, will you please kill me if you ever see me going on my dad vacation and I've got my polo shirt that's too tight, that's tucked into my two dark Wrangler blue jeans with my brown belt, with my tennis shoes on, with my little baby gut sticking out. I'm like, dude, come on, man. Have a little bit of style.
Just a tiny bit. Or just untuck your shirt.
Did he get a henna tattoo?
Oh, I'm sure he has one. Have you seen, there's actually a Photoshop picture of him with dreadlock.
I saw that. They made fun of that on Saturday Night Live, too. Could you imagine him with a henna tattoo? Could you imagine how hairy that back is? And that stuff would just, like, stick to it. Yeah.
So not only did he leave his constituents to freeze, he left his dog.
Yeah. You know what his dog's name was?
Snowflake.
Snowflake.
Left his dog to freeze in the house while he went to Cancun.
Right.
Then he blamed it on his daughters.
Yes, his teenage daughters. There's nothing to say.
Can I get a fuck you?
Yeah, fuck you, Ted Cruz. Yeah, fuck you. I mean, come on, man.
You're not even as original as Rush Limbaugh.
No.
Fucking useless.
Man.
So, back to Twitter again.
Yep.
And Ben Shapiro was like, what else is he supposed to do? Take a blowtorch to Texas? No, it's called solidarity, motherfucker.
Right.
Next question.
Right.
Thank you. Solved. Done.
It's to do what AOC and Beto O'Rourke did, is actually distribute water and raise money. And
$4 million AOC
actually
raised.
Do what leaders do.
Just yeah. Lead.
Just lead. It's not, in a time of crisis, it isn't hard to lead and be there for your people.
Show up.
Yeah. Like when George Bush climbed up on the mountain of the rubble with the firefighter.
Why do you think Giuliani was so popular?
Right. It was awesome.
Was there.
But it was easy. It's not that. Yeah. Those aren't the hard times of your job. I mean, it's difficult to help people. I mean, it's difficult to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
But it's not difficult to simply show that you give any fuck.
Just show up and go, what do you guys need? That's all he had to
do. That's all you have to do.
And that's a presidential race right there.
Even Donald Trump threw paper towels at people in Puerto Rico.
Ted Cruz threw paper towels at people in Mexico.
Both aren't part of America, right?
Oh!
They wouldn't know.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
So, guess where Ted Cruz and his family went?
Where?
Here's Ted Cruz in the airport.
Have you seen the well-to-do up and down Park Avenue?
Shut up.
On that famous thoroughfare with their noses in the air.
Where'd you go, Ted?
Oh, I don't know.
Narrow collars, white spats, and lots of dollars. Spending every dime for a wonderful time. Now if you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Ted Cruz on the Ritz.
Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coat.
So that motherfucker went to Cancun and stayed at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel while his constituents and his fellow statesmen froze to death. 47 people froze to death.
Yep.
Can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you. Two times. Three times.
47
times.
And you left your dog.
Named after snow. You can't make this shit up.
No.
God damn.
No.
Oh. Oh, so one of the excuses that I have heard from people defending Texas's deregulated energy clusterfuck.
Oh, let's hear it, because I'm ready to...
Is that this event in Texas was a 100-year, quote, black swan, meaning a rare weather event, and when you don't experience those type of events very often, you don't typically put the resources into preparing for them. Can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you.
Right.
And can I call bullshit on it?
Absolutely.
Happened in 1989.
Yep. Yeah. Black swans are normal now because of...
Global warming.
Global fucking warming. Which is caused by primarily...
Fossil fuels.
Fossil fuels. Yeah. That when go...
You see where we're going with this?
Yeah. That happened to go unchecked due to
deregulation.
Fucks everything up. That's
by
what we got.
The Republican Party.
Yes. Absolutely. They have an obsession. They have a love affair with deregulation. And they have played this game forever, especially since the 1980s, where they make the argument that when you regulate business, you handcuff them from being able to be profitable and to be successful, and that the regulations themselves are unreasonable and an overreach of bureaucratic government.
Yeah,
but it keeps people alive.
It keeps people alive. And not to say, I'm sure, I mean, God, are there regulations that are muddy and bureaucratic and shitty and horrible? Yes. Yep. Is there a such thing as overregulation? Absolutely. But when it comes to major industries that already are the most profitable industries on the face of the planet in the course of human history, I think they're going to be okay with some regulation.
I think, yeah, and if you see these regulations, we can have that argument. We can. Yeah,
right.
We can talk about it.
We can talk about which regulations are reasonable, which ones aren't, and we can compromise.
And we can do it when the heat's on.
Yeah, we can do it when the heat's on. But it's on in El Paso because they use the national fucking grid.
Yep.
With regulations.
And, yeah, and get this, the Republican Party has tried to blame the Green New Deal somehow.
That isn't in effect, or probably won't go into effect, and hasn't happened.
And they blamed it on wind turbines. Even though the wind turbines, yes, they froze some of them, but the ones that stayed working actually produced more than they thought they ever could.
Yep, absolutely.
And actually helped with the power.
Yep. Right, right, yeah. It was a failure of old-fashioned fossil fuel gas.
Yeah, it froze.
Yeah,
and
it
nuclear,
froze.
Nuclear yeah. Power as well. Mm-hmm. It froze.
Yep.
It, natural gas, fossil fuels, that fucking froze. It's,
absolutely.
Because it's not, it wasn't part of the regulations mm-hmm. to weather it.
Right.
It was only for heat.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I mean,
yeah.
Duh.
We're going to continue to have weather and climate events. We're going to have fires. We're going to have deep freezes. We're going to have Minnesota, 100 degrees. We're going to have floods. Those type of things are here to stay.
Yeah.
It's part of the norm. And we simply have to be prepared to do it. And if that means Bob's Oil and Gas Company makes $2.7 trillion a day instead of $2.75, then I guess we might have to put up with it.
Yeah. And they've also been saying that it shows that wind turbine is not a good source of energy because they freeze. Hmm. Tell that to Norway. Tell that to Iceland.
Right.
Tell that to Sweden. Tell that to the yeah. huge turbines
you weatherize
in the North
the shit.
Sea or in the yeah. Arctic Circle. It works.
How about using innovation and technology to better that technology so it doesn't freeze? I mean, we've talked about this before.
When
you regulate industries, it can force them into innovation, which results eventually into profit.
Yeah, there's actually a good little quote. Between 92 and 95... there was $7 million invested into renewable energies mm-hmm. by the government. There was $2 billion invested into fossil fuels.
Right.
Even though we know that we've had that technology forever.
Forever. Yeah.
Of course it's going to work a little bit better.
Yeah.
Unless you deregulate it. Still it
goes back to that old movie, Who Killed the Electric Car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
It just, it's nonsensical. And nobody, like, the Green New Deal, the way it's presented in its pure form, isn't going to happen anytime soon. But at least the conversation is starting for the transition. We're talking about a transition here from fossil fuel dependency to more modern sources of energy that are renewable. Who the fuck is against that shit?
I don't know. And then they claim that we need to be energy dependent. Surely wind and solar and things like that makes you more independent.
Right. Right.
The terrorists aren't going to take the wind away.
Keep camp buying that Saudi wind and that Iraqi sunshine.
I don't want no desert sunshine. No Arab sunshine in my fucking power grid.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
It just doesn't make any sense. And then you have a major catastrophe like this, and do they learn from it? Nope. They dig in their heels to the same old fucking bullshit.
And they just start blaming shit.
Right.
The first thing that they see that's not them.
Right. Right.
And it's just sickening. Just be like, oh, yeah, we fucked up.
And Don Jr. blaming Democratic Governor Abbott for the problems, and he's a Republican. He said it over and over and over again.
Yeah. Just,
but people believe it. I mean, we're to that point where if Trump or Don Jr. or Steve Bannon says, actually, the governor of Texas isn't a Republican, he's a Democrat, people say he's a Democrat. No, he's not. He's a Republican. No, he's a Democrat.
And you know what? Say if you call him out on it. Oh, I meant he was a rhino. Republican in name only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see? See? I should be a fucking
right
Republican campaign manager. I got this.
Yeah.
This is easy.
Absolutely. If you do, I'll give you a fuck you.
Speaking about fuck yous,
we're full of them tonight. Yeah,
we
man.
Are. We are. We're going. We're
you staying. Cannot do this episode without doing a fuck you or two. You can't. It's impossible. Right. You know, because we're talking about the worst people in our government right now.
Yeah, and the mayor of Colorado, Texas, said this. No one. Oh, this is about the power grid going down and the whole thing. So no one owes you or your family anything, nor is it the local government's responsibility to support you during trying times like this. He said, sink or swim, it's your choice. The city and county, along with power providers or any other service, owes you nothing. I'm sick and tired of people looking for a damn handout. Even though it was the government that did this to them.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, he's resigned.
Was that in the context of the billing crisis? Or
no, this was before the billing crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
This was as it was happening.
Yeah. Wow.
This was last week during your fever dream. But
it was a wet fever dream. Just saying.
Fuck me.
Well, that was part of it.
I need to choose my words carefully.
My wife's going to be like, God damn it. Every fucking episode have to include you freaking assholes making these
jokes. Yes, it does, Amy. But I think with a mayor, the leader of the town, saying, we don't owe you a goddamn thing, well, I'd be going, well, I don't owe you any goddamn taxes.
Exactly.
Salary back, please.
Right.
Obviously, if you're not going to help us, we don't need you.
Right. Oh, man. Man.
I mean, come on. Fuck. You see, and he claimed he was saying as a private citizen, but you're not a private citizen when you're an elected member of government.
Right.
It just, you're not.
Right. And then this whole billing thing.
Yeah.
So people who signed up for uneven billing and did not lose their power, they absorbed the cost of the shared energy of people whose lights stayed on. There's people with bills in the tens of thousands of dollars for a few days of energy.
Because most of Texas is under the supply. So whatever the supply costs is what they have to charge their customers.
Yep.
And I don't want to go into that. I mean, you can look that up about how they really fucked themselves. And they, yeah.
But the bills,
of thousands of
the
dollars.
Bills are coming now. They're going to be due, and the collections are going to go after them.
Yeah.
Unless something's done. But nobody's talking about fixing that. They're talking about, oh, that sucks, but I haven't heard a plan. I mean, we got bailout money flying everywhere, it seems, for every goddamn thing. You know? I mean, for real. You know, even as a liberal, I'm like, what the fuck is this money coming from for every little goddamn thing? $50,000 college debt. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, holy fucking shit. This, yeah. We're talking like, we just signed a 20 quadrillion bill to pay back. What the fuck? I mean, there are some concerns about how much things are costing right now.
Oh, yeah. There's a $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill in Congress right now.
Yeah, and I don't know how to rectify that, you know. But can we help out somebody that has a $10,000 bill?
Or just say, no, power companies, you were not getting that money.
Right.
No.
Yeah, not this time.
You didn't work.
Right.
So, yeah. No.
Right. Your system failed, so.
Yeah, so, I'm sorry. Capitalism.
Right, yeah. Yep, yep. Adam Smith, invisible hand, bitch.
Slapping you right in the fucking face. Yeah, I'll just go down the Ritz-Carlton.
Yep. Take care of all your problems. No
I heard,
shame.
I heard
no
someone described it as he slithered down there. It's like, yeah, it's all right.
And then just yesterday, he's trying to get Fox News sound bites with the Merrick Garland confirmation and all that. It's like, dude, what a pitiful piece of shit.
Let me get this straight. Ted Cruz needed help. He didn't have the quality of life that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't be provided to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he went across the border.
Seeking a better life.
Isn't that a refugee?
That sounds like a refugee.
Holy fuck.
But he took care of the problem himself, so he came back home. He left his daughters there, so he did his own family separation.
They kicked his ass back out.
They kicked his ass back out.
Fuck no, we'll keep the women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Our people coming over from the border, the U.S. government was separating the families. He's choosing to separate his families and throw his daughters under the bus. Good job, buddy. Yeah.
Well done. That's a hero.
Hero. Don't you know that you're my hero?
Fuck, we shouldn't have let him back in.
Oh, no shit. Climb the wall, bitch.
I need some documentation.
Exactly.
It's just hypocrisy. I mean, that he could literally, if he stayed and did what Beto O'Rourke's doing, he could have launched a presidential bid.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Hero of Texas.
Yeah.
It's easy.
The bar's low. Holy crap and shit, man. The bar is low. I mean.
It's too high for Ted Cruz, though.
If Donald Trump apologized for anything that he did over the last few years, people would be like, oh, actually, maybe you're not too bad of a guy.
He something. He re-elected. Learned his lesson, didn't
right,
he?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. So do you think Donald Trump's going to run in 2024?
No.
I don't think he's going
to. He's in too much legal trouble. He's in too much financial trouble. He's going to be mired in so much bullshit.
I don't think he has the mental capacity to do it again.
No, he doesn't have the mental capacity. I don't even think he would get the nomination.
No, there's blood in the water now.
There is blood in the water. Blood in the water. Who took the bite? Mitchie Bear. Oh, yeah. So, Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell, there is now a rift.
Well, wow, we did that segue without even trying.
Oh, we did. And so Mitch, being the sly politician that he is, he used Donald Trump for political advantage to get Supreme Court nominees in to do a lot of, like, you know, promote Trump's agenda. And now that Trump's out of the Oval Office, they don't need each other anymore.
Bye, Felicia.
Bye, Felicia. And they never really had a personal relationship. It's not like Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump. They don't like each other too much. And Mitch McConnell's words when he voted to acquit Donald Trump of crimes against humanity still blamed him for them. He blamed him for them, but he didn't vote to find him guilty about those. No, and that drew the ire of Donald Trump because it's all about loyalty to him.
And it's about, what are you going to do for me for Donald Trump?
Exactly.
And Mitchie Bear's like, what are you going to do for me?
Exactly. Yeah. And Mitch doesn't care. Mitch doesn't give a shit.
No, Mitch does not give a shit.
He really doesn't. And Donald Trump, what Donald Trump does best is he hurls insults. He called him sullen and I forget what the exact words were. It was, for Donald Trump, it was relatively reserved for him. But apparently he wanted to also make fun of Mitch McConnell's multiple chins and was convinced to do otherwise.
Yeah, advisors apparently persuaded Trump to nix the chin bit.
The chin bit.
Oh, shit. Mm. I mean, and that's just, that kind of schoolyard behavior isn't going to phase McConnell in the fucking slightest.
No, not at all.
It's not, he probably didn't even read the story about it, to be honest.
Right. No. Probably didn't at all. Yeah.
So I think Trump is wading into political waters that he is a fish that is way too small for that pond.
Yeah.
Even though he was president, this is a different set of piranhas circling around you. They're not your friends anymore.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. And Mitch McConnell, I mean, he just won re-election last year, so he's got 4 years left as a senator. And who knows if he'll run again. He's getting pretty old. Yeah. And even if he does choose to run again, he's banking on 4 years. People are going to be not worried about this rift anymore.
Well, people hate him. They still fucking elect him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, people hate Congress. They love their congressman.
Yeah.
I mean, the incumbency rate in this country is still in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not...
No, he's not. He doesn't give two shits about it.
So, if Trump wants to fight that battle, then he's going to get really lonely really quickly.
Yeah. Trump's time is done. This whole talk about the third party, the Patriot Party... Every time third party talk comes up, it goes away.
Do it.
Right. Let's split some electoral votes, bitches.
Yep.
Right.
That'll kill the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
I mean, go ahead.
This is a side thought, but when I think of splitting that up and like the vote and like who, you know, the demographic of each political party, I did see on Meet the Press this weekend that those who voted for Donald Trump and those who identify with the Republican Party between blue-collar Hispanics and African-Americans has actually gone up.
Wow.
And not by a percent, 5 to 7%.
That's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Democrats, remember how we've talked about taking for granted African-Americans and Hispanics and other groups you claim to put your big arms around? Time to show it.
Yep.
You know? Because
it's time to win some fucking elections, guys.
Time to
Jesus
win some
Christ.
Fucking elections. It all go back to it. That.
And you look at on a national stage, Texas almost elected Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah.
It's turning into a purple state. And if Texas is gone from the Republicans, that's it for them.
All done. Done.
That's it for
national
politics.
Second biggest state done. In the Electoral College. Yeah.
Gone. Yeah.
Oh, I can't imagine just watching President O'Rourke with his hands flailing around. And yeah, I like him a lot. His body language
drives
me up.
How high can I roll these sleeves up?
Right. Man on the ground.
I need a table to jump on.
Pipe it down. Yeah. Put on your blue jeans and your polo shirt. Yeah. Act like a real politician.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... If Beto O'Rourke keeps it up, and Cruz keeps it up, I don't... I can see Beto running again and unseating him.
Absolutely.
Did you hear this quote by Al Franken? He says, "I don't hate Senator Cruz as much as the other senators, but I hate Ted Cruz."
I miss old Al.
I mean, he's not even liked in his party personally.
No, everybody. No one likes him personally. They hate his guts. He's an asshole. Yeah, and Ted Cruz even admits it, that he's not likable. He doesn't hide it.
Obviously.
He's got a lot of problems. Get him out of there.
Yeah, they keep voting him in, so.
Yep.
But hopefully one of these days, when Texas freezes over, maybe.
Can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right, what else is on the agenda?
Man, so that's our big stuff, but man, there's so much news going on this week. We got a few little tidbits just to kind of remind our listeners of. The Supreme Court issued a one-line, can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you.
To Trump and his tax returns. Woo! And a very quick one-line, can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you.
To Pennsylvania's challenging of the election results. So the Supreme Court, including all three of Trump's nominees, gave Trump a big giant
fuck you.
Yes. Except for Clarence Thomas. He's not one of his nominees, but...
Clarence Thomas.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well,
we could do an episode on him.
Yeah. The confirmation of Neera Tanden for the Office of Management and Budget. I haven't heard anything today on it. Oh,
Merrick Garland.
Merrick Garland, yeah. Merrick Garland is in. Neera Tanden, the Republicans don't like her because of her previous tweets. Where she was mean. So now we're going to use assholey tweets to decide whether or not you should be confirmed in a position of government.
How ironic.
I mean, come on. You're really going to be that hypocritical? Yep.
Yep. Yep. Mitchie Bear don't care.
And then I saw a story that it said, a father and daughter from Southwest Ohio were arrested for their part in the Capitol riots and insurrection, and they also claimed to be there to assist the Secret Service. I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I clicked on the little link, and they're my neighbors.
Where the fuck do you live?
In the fucking sticks. Yeah. So right up where they live, what's funny, there's this hillbilly house that all through the last 4 years, big Trump flags, don't tread on me. After the election, big giant stop the steal flags. And there's like trucks and power equipment and booms and all kinds of stuff in the front yard. So they had all that shit up. After Biden got inaugurated, they took all those flags down and they hung up like 10 American distress signal flags upside down. Yeah. Of keepers, but just fucking idiots. And they're like, they're in their 60s and they're dressed in military garb and goggles and they're carrying AK-47. It's like,
so they're cosplaying.
They're cosplaying. They're too fat and stupid to be the military or cops, so they're going to dress up as paramilitary. They're going to cosplay. They're like, oh, fucking ridiculous. Oh my God. So to my neighbors, can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you. Insurrectious bastards. Yeah, this is like the fourth story where you've had like this kind of interaction with people you live around.
Right, right. Did I tell you the story of the racist lady in my neighborhood who called out the black kid selling candy bars?
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah, we had that whole beginning.
Her husband died last week.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
I don't know anything else about that.
Okay.
Yeah, poor lady.
Poor lady. We don't want anybody to die or leave their family.
No.
But yeah, it's like...
She's still racist, but that's okay.
Yeah.
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 Sure, it won't change.
Yeah, it won't change.
Well, do you have anything else for us? Any other racist neighbors or insurrectionists that live in your basement or something?
I think that's all that I have. I think that's all that I have. Man, this has been a fun episode.
Yeah, it's been really good. I'm glad you're back.
This episode sets the FDR's wheelchair record for the most fucks recorded.
I think it does.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Good.
Listeners.
Yeah, dude.
You should count the fucks in the episode.
Yeah, let us know.
And the first person to email us at FDR'sWheelchairPodcast@gmail.com will get...
Whatever you
ask. We need to start making a profit so we can have merchandise.
I know. I want to get some t-shirts going.
You'll get a shout out in the next episode. We do need to get t-shirts rolling.
We do.
We need t-shirts. We need our listeners to have stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to get some coffee mugs and stickers. I want stickers.
Oh, dude. Hell yeah, stickers.
There's some like guerrilla advertising around.
Absolutely. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody got any money?
This is our Patreon.
Well, the whole idea of Patreon is that people pay and we give them shit.
I know.
Not just a...
Maybe it's like the Field of Dreams kind of concept. If we have it, they'll order it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that works.
Yeah, it totally worked for Kevin Costner.
Yeah, that really worked for Amy's cousin trying to get her teeth paid for. Oh, if anybody wants that story, just ask me. You can't make this shit up.
You've said it on the episode.
Yeah, I know.
But we can.
But did I tell the whole story? I did tell the story. I did tell the whole story. So, oh, I never repeat myself.
We're full of content.
You're just making a false equivalency.
But that's all I got, man.
Yeah. God, keep listening, guys. Share with your friends.
Yeah, please share with people. Let people know.
Yeah. We had a listener from Moscow this past week.
We did.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. The commies are listening to our... Uh-oh. Yeah. Maybe it was Putin.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We did call him out in some episodes.
We did. We did. So,
we're sorry.
So next week, we have no idea what we're going to talk about because I'm sure there's a lot of shit that's going to happen.
Yeah, we're going to talk about cancel culture.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about cancel culture. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the hypocrisy
of
people bitching about cancel culture are the ones bitching the most.
Exactly. They want to cancel.
I'm so tired of seeing the fucking liberal tears thing.
They wanted to cancel an election. So... Can I get a fuck you?
Fuck you.
Yeah. I'm going to save that for next week. Yeah. Man. So as I promised at the end of the show, we are going to leave you
with some more fishbone.
Some more fishbone.
But first, we're going to go over our social media.
Yep.
So please join me on Twitter. It's fun. It's getting more and more fun.
Oh, yeah. It's good.
It's funny. So we are FDR_wheelchair. That's our handle. Email us any ideas, anything you want, t-shirts, mugs.
Number of fucks in the episode.
Email us at FDR'swheelchairpodcast@gmail.com. And check out our videos that we've been putting on online. I think we have 4 now, but they're just their life inside entering the chair.
Right. Yep. It just demonstrates how good we are pretending that we like each other during the actual episodes.
I know, it's amazing. Yeah.
Bastard.
Fuck you. Give you a fuck you. So, yeah, I appreciate you guys listening. Stay tuned next week and let your friends know. And without any further ado, this is Fishbone.
Togetherness.